Welcome to the Clarity Corner, where you'll discover how to unlock and express the most authentic version of you and realize that this is exactly what you were looking for the entire time. I'm your host and your coach, Megan Siemens. Now let's make some magic happen. Welcome back, friend. Today we have an aligned interview with our guest, Sierra Rubin. A little about Sierra. In 2015, Sierra was told by an aura reader that she was meant to be a spiritual teacher and leader. At the time, she thought the lady was crazy, but trusted a tiny gut feeling to look further into it. Since then, Sierra has helped thousands of people with her intuitive work, often getting the high praise of, "How did you know that?" After realizing that everyone has the ability to develop their intuitive and psychic abilities, Sierra started a spiritual business to spread the message. As an empath with powerful clairvoyance and clairaudience, Sierra leans on her intuition to guide all decisions in her life, which led her to a pilgrimage to Egypt, a cross-country adventure that saved her marriage, and the empowered home births of her two sons. Wow, Sierra is such a dynamic human. Not only do we chat about those things like what is clairvoyance, what is clairaudience, but we also chat through some of her amazing journeys that she's had in life. And I just love that right there in her bio, she said, "I trusted this tiny little gut feeling," because Sierra is one of our manifesting generators. So we do chat through some of what does it mean to follow that gut feeling, especially when something feels like it's working, but you just feel this gut feeling to make a change. Sierra also has a 5-1 in her human design profile, and we do chat a little bit about that 5-line and what it means to be that leader that sometimes has some rebellious things to say and what it means to follow that in a really aligned and sovereign way. This is such a good conversation. I feel like you're just going to feel as though you're sitting with two friends drinking coffee, having conversation about life. And as always, after the episode, head over to the show notes so you can connect with Sierra further, including getting her brand new best-selling book, You Always Know. You'll definitely want to get your hands on a copy of that after hearing this episode. Hello, my friends. Today we have a spicy, spiritual, Cali-born girl with a southern sensibility. I had to use those words. Our guest today is a spiritual teacher. She is the keeper of teeny tiny tarot cards, which are amazing. Also a singer and a newly best-selling author of the amazing book, You Always Know. Sierra, welcome to the Clarity Corner.
Oh my goodness. I'm so happy. What an intro. I can't believe you read that. That's so amazing.
Yeah. Those first words, to be clear, are from her website. And I just thought they were so perfect to describe you. I was like, spicy, spiritual. Yes, that's you.
Yay.
It's 100% you. And we actually did an interview years ago and it was magical. So I'm so excited to see where this conversation unfolds.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to start with some location chat because you've had some really cool experiences in life, which is not surprising as a manifesting generator, which we'll get into later. But I feel like you and I just like share this love for like finding sacred places. I feel like I've read about you've had experiences in Egypt, you've had experiences in Mount Shasta, you had a cross-country journey, and I'm just like kind of craving a story. Do you feel like pulled to share about any of those experiences specifically?
Sure, yeah. And funnily enough, the one that is coming forward is not one that is in the book necessarily, but it is an experience that I had in the area of Mount Shasta. So for those of you listening who don't know that much about Mount Shasta, it is actually a dormant volcano in the very, very northern part of California. And it has 4 cones, 2 of which have erupted and 2 of which have not. And so it is a very magical place. Some people consider it to be one of the chakras of the planet. There's argument over whether it's the root or the crown. I don't think it really matters. But it's what does matter is that it is a very lit up place. It is a very spiritual and vibey place. You go there and you can feel it right away that there is an energy there. Also, it was rumored that when the civilizations of Atlantis and Lemuria fell, that some of the people that survived that catastrophe migrated there and settled within the actual mountain somewhere. And so it's very interesting because when I went there, I had many different experiences, but this one story that I want to share was actually in a place called Pluto's Cave. And Pluto's Cave is basically like a lava tube. So if you could imagine a volcano erupts, there are different tubes and drips of lava that are coming down off of the volcano. And then eventually, over time, that lava cools and hardens, and then dirt piles on top of it. And then eventually, as it cools and hardens enough, it starts to crack and fall away, leaving these underground caves. And so, my husband and I went to this Pluto's cave, and right when and I was completely sober, I just want to state that, right up front. So, before we get into these mystical
We know this
experiences.
story's gonna go somewhere wild.
Yes. So when I first walked into the cave, I just had this feeling like, okay, there's sort of like stages, like I'm going through these stages because when we first walked in, there were bats on the ceiling. And I had a thought initially, my fear, my monkey brain was like, oh my God, bats, like don't go in there, But I was like, no, like this is gonna be fine. This is something I need to get through and not be afraid of. And so I stepped in, we stepped in, and the bats didn't move. They didn't swirl around us. They just were still sleeping. It was daytime. And so we walked past that. And as we went further in my mind's eye, in my third eye, I saw a circle of shamans sitting on the floor of the cave. And once I got close enough and noticed that they were noticing me, they immediately came and surrounded me, almost like an experience, like if you were in meditation and you could sense that like your spirit guides or your passed over loved ones were around you. So they were just all around me, like all up in my face, like very, I wouldn't say aggressive, but very assertively, like questioning me, questioning my motives and my intentions for being there. And so I was a little taken aback by that because I was literally just like hiking with my husband. So I was just like, I don't have any intention, I don't have any motivation. I'm just here exploring. And so as soon as I said that, I think that they could sort of sense the truth of that. And so they dissipated and left. And so it was at that point I was like, I knew this is some type of initiation. Like this is some the bats and then the shaman. And so I was wondering to myself, like, what is in here? What is in here? What are they guarding? What is being guarded here, like spiritually? And so I walked further and further in. And as it got darker in the lava tube, I just had this sense that, like, if I kept walking, that I would go somewhere that was not in the Pluto's cave, that was some sort of a portal or some sort of maybe not even an energetic portal, maybe even like a physical way to get to a place that was deep inside the earth. And I had this telepathic communication as I got closer and further into the dark, and I started to get a little bit scared. But I started to hear this in my mind's ear, this telepathic communication that said, yes, we're here. We're going to come out, but not today. Come back another time. We will meet, like we will meet again. And I was just like, that's weird. And so I picked up a rock, like a lava rock from that place, and took it with me. And it wasn't until maybe a year later that I was looking on the internet and I came across some information about different sacred sites around the world. And they were talking about Mount Shasta, and it was a whole paragraph, little essay about it. But then at the very bottom, there was a teeny tiny little paragraph that said, most people say that they have their most mystical and profound experiences in the Pluto's cave, and that many believe this to be a portal to either inner Earth or somewhere else. And I was just like, when you read that and then you had the experience prior and you just know, like, wow, like validation. I wasn't making that up.
Yeah, oh my gosh. So much magic in that story. And this is so why I wanted to go here with you, because we do just like share this magical connection to locations, which I think everyone has in some way, shape, or form. And that's so your zone. So I'd love for you to speak to that. But what I think is fascinating about this story is I actually went to Mount Shasta when I was like 13 or 14. And well before any spiritual journey I was on, any awakening I was in around my intuition or anything like that, I was so grumpy on this trip. I remember my parents being like, just like getting frustrated at that point of their teenager being like extremely grumpy on a family road trip. And I remember the minute we went to Mount Shasta and I got my feet on the earth, that everything in my energy shifted. And I wouldn't have worded it like that when I was 13 or 14, but I have these images of me standing on that mountain. I'm like playing in the snow in like shorts, and I'm just having the best time. And I truly feel like sometimes we can get to locations and they just like shift our energy and they can create these magical experiences. Were you always like this, or was this something that you like kind of awakened to, kind of came to on your journey?
That's an interesting question because I would say that I was always open to it, but I had such a wild and vivid imagination growing up. And when you're a kid, everybody tells you, oh, that was just your imagination. So anytime I would have some type of fantasy or imaginative thing going on in my mind's eye, I would be like, oh, that's just my imagination, And it wasn't until when I was 13 and I had my very first experience of we did like a seance that I thought was going to be like a pretend seance, and then I started seeing all these things in my mind, and I started saying it, and I just thought, oh, like I'm making this up, like this is fun, it's just my imagination. But it turned out that the person that I was describing in my head was the birthday girl's grandfather who had passed away. And so yeah. And then I made her cry on her birthday. Oh, like, oops. Sorry. But when I realized that in hindsight, it was in hindsight after my awakening that I realized, oh, all of these imaginative things that were going on in my mind, maybe they were metaphorical, right? Not always literal. But that doesn't mean it was just my imagination, and it doesn't mean that I was making it up. And I would say that it wasn't until that I had my spiritual awakening that I really started to validate those experiences and not shy away from them, right? Like even the process of telling you about the bats and the shaman and the voice in my mind's ear, there's so many still bells going off in my head. You're making it up. This is crazy, right? And so just trusting that experience was real for me in whatever way it needed to be in that moment, and then having that validated by what I read later on was very helpful.
Yeah, that's so potent that you shared that right there, that you're like, even when I'm telling this story now, there's still bells and alarms going off in my mind. That's like, you're making this up, it's in your imagination, because I feel like there is this like unspoken feeling that we can get in the spiritual world that like you're going to arrive and it's going to be like white light and magic and butterflies.
And it is if you let it. And that's really the message here. And what you were saying is like, just let it. Let it be magical. Let yourself experience the magic for what it is, and try to suspend that disbelief a little bit. Like obviously always be discerning, have the logic, sit with it. It doesn't mean that you need to immediately tell everybody about these experiences. Some experiences are for sharing. And some experiences are just for you, right? But allow yourself to suspend that disbelief a little bit and see if you can find meaning in the experience.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that. It's like really like merging the practical and the spiritual together. Like actually just like let your logic play with it a little bit. And that can actually be really supportive for the spiritual aspect as well. Do you find that because of those like bells and the things that we're told on like imagination, a lot of people just like shut it off completely?
Yes, and I think that that's a big reason why a lot of people don't think that they're very intuitive. It's just because of the messaging that they have received, or they have been told through, Hollywood movies how they're going to experience the spirit world, or horror movies, being told that that's how they're going to experience the spirit world. And so their fear is literally coloring the experience, right? I say a lot that your experience is directly related to your vibration, to your frequency, and what you have been inundating your consciousness with, the programming that you have been consuming, whether that is, through relatives, movies, media. And so all of that to say that a lot of times it's just, we have it twisted on what a spiritual experience might be like, or we have fears about what it might be like. And when you can allow yourself to have the experience, just have it and validate it, or at least question it, then it can really surprise you.
Yeah, I love that. So your book subtitle, so the title is You Always Know, and it's for the 4-step guide for empaths to stop second guessing and trust your intuition. So maybe don't give us all 4 steps, but if someone is out there like I am stuck in that second guessing, I have shut it down. What is intuition? I'm not even sure if it's there. Maybe like what's the first step that you would share?
Yeah, the first step is to learn the language that your intuition is primarily speaking. Because once you understand that and you are looking for the ways in which your intuition is going to communicate with you, it's a lot easier to understand it and trust it enough to take action on it. So, I talk about four main intuitive senses in the book. They're called the clairs, right? We've all heard of clairvoyance. Right, which is very much associated with the psychic, that is clear seeing. But there are three other ones, and I would argue that one of them is actually the most powerful and more powerful than clairvoyance. So stick with me. So we have the clairvoyance, we have clairaudience, which is clear hearing. That's those experiences in your mind's ear, hearing music that seems to come from nowhere, or hearing someone say your name, or even sometimes just hearing a song on the radio that really feels resonant with what you're going through at the moment. That is clairaudience. And then claircognizance is that clear knowing. That is that instant knowing that you get, but most of the time don't trust because it comes in so easily. And we need everything to be hard, right? So that is claircognizance. And those are the moments when, like, you're thinking about somebody and they text you, or the things like that. And then clairsentience is clear feeling. And that is, funnily enough, very synonymous with the word empath, and tends to be the intuitive sense that most of my clients and students have as their primary. So the clairsentience, that's clear feeling, that means your gut feelings, sensing energy, feeling energy, sensitivities maybe to certain foods or substances. All of this is clairsentience. And I argue that clairsentience is the most powerful intuitive sense because it is centered in two of the main chakras that are within the body, right? So we have clairvoyance, which is obviously the third eye, clairaudience, which is in the throat, and by extension, the ears, which these are like little, smaller chakras. Claircognizance is in the crown, right? So all of these are in one main chakra. But clairsentience is in both your solar plexus and your heart, right? And so that is why it is the sense of the healer, the sense of the empath. You get those gut feelings because that is where it is centered. And so that is one reason why I believe that clairsentience is the strongest. And also because the body has no choice but to be present, right? Your mind can be in the past. Your mind can be in the future, but your body literally has no choice but to be in the present. And as spiritual seekers, we know that the now, the present, is where the potency, the magic, all is, that now is all there is. And so when you feel something in the body, it's true.
I couldn't love this more because we're about to start talking about your human design, and so much of your design is power in your body. And I love this is what I love about human design. It's that it's nothing new, it's just you. And like everything you're sharing is so, it's like giving me goosebumps because I've just like dove deep into your chart. And so to hear how, if you're just listening to us on audio, the face was like,
Uh-oh.
but I love how connected you are to your body and how you call in these clients, these people into your space that are feeling that connection in their body as well. And then you're supporting them in like, okay, but what do I actually do with that? Like, what do I actually do with those gut feelings? What do I actually do with these like unexplainable knowings that are coming through? And so I'm just pausing here to reflect on how magical and potent your gifts are and how much they're showing through.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I will say as well that a lot of my clients come to me actually feeling very disconnected from their bodies, that they do not trust their bodies and they have used their bodies and abused their bodies and are much more interested in the intellect and the clairvoyance and the things like that. And so sometimes that's a nice way around is to go through the clairvoyance first and then get into the body, because they are having those gut feelings and they are having those sensations. And the reason why they don't trust it is because they are at war with their body. They hate things about their body. They've been receiving messages through media, culture, et cetera, about their body. So sometimes it is really hard to connect with your body, but it's not impossible and it can be simple.
Yeah, I love the process of like, what if we started through another channel and then connected them all together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spirit takes the path of least resistance.
Delicious. So let's talk about your human design because we've been skirting it a little bit here.
Okay.
Sierra is a manifesting generator with an emotional authority, a 5-1 profile, and some incredible strengths. And if you're like, what the heck does that mean? We're going to break it down a little bit. So, manifesting generators are our multi-passionate movers, incredibly connected to when living in alignment to their gut feeling that's pulling them towards or away. And manifesting generators have this capacity to hold as many yeses as possible. So I love that not only are you this amazing spiritual teacher, but you're also a singer and you do both, like all at the same time. Like if you follow Sierra on Instagram, there will be like these potent, like wisdom reels dropped of just like incredible teaching or the teeny tiny tarot readings, which I love. And then you'll see a beautiful song. And I feel like this is such a pure example of being that like multi-passionate mover that can hold so much. And also manifesting generators are here to like have the experiences, which we heard through your storytelling, to just like be all in the experience until it's time to pivot, until it's time to move, and to like sometimes let go of things like right in the middle of a sentence. Does that feel resonant to you? I mean.
Are you kidding? Yes, I definitely, until writing this book, I was like pivot queen. Like, it's funny because the process that I share in the book is actually the very first course that I ever created when I first was like doing internets and all of that in 2015. And it's funny because I pivoted from there into talking about chakras, into talking about vocal sound healing, into talking about galactic consciousness, into and then now we've circled back into intuition development through the process that I myself went through and put myself through as a life path. So yeah, that definitely resonates. And I also, as a Capricorn rising in my astrology, I feel this need to commit, to yes, commit, but committing to this wasn't hard because there's so much involved, right? I'm talking about chakras, I'm talking about clairs, I'm talking about shadow work and spiritual self-care and tarot, all in one process.
Oh my
So if that
gosh.
wasn't so perfect for a mani gen, I don't know what is.
Yes, that is such an incredible example. I'm curious, what is it like for you to honor the no's, especially on projects that maybe once felt good and maybe still feel good? Do you ever have that experience where you're like, this still feels good, but it kind of feels like a full body no?
Yes, I've had that experience a couple of times. I have one that I'm going through in real time, but I like to share from scars, not wounds. So I'm going to go to an
Love that.
older one of when I was actually the lead singer in a band in my neighborhood. This was maybe like a year and a half ago that I started doing it, and I did it for a year, and I absolutely loved it. I loved singing and, stretching that muscle and building my confidence in that way, like tapping into my inner Miley Cyrus and just really being a confident stage performer. And I just loved, interacting with the people in the crowd and all of that. And I started to get the inkling that it was a no and that I needed to let go of it. And that was really hard for me at first because there was so much about it that I loved. And I also recognized that, every full moon, there'd be some kind of drama because, most of the people in the group were not self-aware or like spiritual seekers. Some were. But so at drama every full moon. And then, just recognizing that in order to build a community around this book, around the message in this book, really, that I needed to give up something good for something better. And as a mom of two young kids, I have a 6-year-old and an almost 3-year-old boys, and as a wife, that I didn't want to add even more time away from them because they are my priority. And so I was doing band practice once a week, and then every like once or twice a month we'd do a show. And so I've traded that now to going to local spiritual events in my community and teaching workshops here in the Atlanta area and doing events and going to events and meeting people. And there is still a part of me that is sad and that misses band, but it was a full body no.
Do you find that you support people? Because I know you help a lot of empaths, and I feel like sometimes the shadow side of being an empath is maybe being a people pleaser. We're getting some head shakes there.
Yes.
So do you feel like that is like kind of the number one reason that people hold on to like a no, just to like please the people around them? Or do you find like other reasons that people are holding on to those no's?
I think part of it is because they are recovering people pleasers. I call myself a recovering people pleaser. And I think the other part of it is that, when you become somebody that sets boundaries, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are all the way okay with being that a person that sets boundaries, right? You're setting the boundaries, you're doing that difficult thing. But then you're beating yourself up for it, or you go back on what you said. Like for example, with the band example, initially I was pregnant, and so I said, I'm going to take a step back. My energy is really low, and I'm going to let some other of the singers in the band really just like step forward and build their repertoire. And then I had a miscarriage, and I lost the baby. And so I was like, well, maybe I should go back. And they're really asking me to come back. But I went back twice before I finally was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Because I felt bad. I felt bad about setting that boundary and about quote unquote letting them down, right? I don't know if this is in my human design or not, but people, at least they tell me, they tend to look at me as like a leader. And so when I feel like I'm in that position, I really, really extra don't want to let people down, and I don't want to upset people. And to be completely transparent, I don't want them to think that I'm a bad person for changing my mind or for pulling out of something that was seemingly so good, but just wasn't actually working.
Yeah, I feel like that's such the Manny Gen duality that I hear from so many people, because your energy is designed to like move quick and pivot really fast. And also, like, you have a really big heart at the same time. And so, really like honoring how raw you are with those stories of just like, yeah, like it does bother me. And still, I honor my body. It looks a little messy sometimes, but I honor my body.
Yes, it is. And I'm glad that I did it. I'm glad that I stepped away from it. And, with the situation that I'm going through now in real time, I know that I'm doing the right thing, that my intuition is guiding me in the right way, and that it's more, that fear and that old version of me and the fear of abandonment, right, version of me that is really struggling with it. But in experiences that I write about in the book and just in general in my life, my intuition never is wrong. It always leads me exactly where I'm supposed to be going.
I love that. Okay, so you just mentioned a moment ago and you said, I don't know if this is in my human design. It is. You were referring to people seeing you as the leader. So your profile is the 5-1. The five profile fascinates me. It is the leader. It is this warrior, kind of like heretic archetype, whereas you have these really practical solutions to deliver to the world. And there are easily projections placed on these people because people do see that natural drive to lead. There's also very much with the five, it's said that there's so much like karma with the five and just constantly meeting strangers that you're immediately like, somehow I know I'm supposed to be connected with you, but I'm not sure how, or reverse, they're gonna feel that like I know you in some way, and then it can go on to those like projections. So yes, it makes all of the sense. So what you were saying before, where you're like, I feel like people just like see me as this leader. And then that one side is all about being the investigator, being the researcher. And this is something that I reflected earlier that I love that you do in your spiritual work. I feel like it has this like really grounded foundation with it. And I always love like the practical tips that you share on your Instagram, and definitely see you in that leader space as well. I mean, you've talked about it a little bit, but what's your relationship with like those projections being placed on you and kind of like how you navigate that a little bit?
Yes, and people do. You're absolutely right about that. And as I was just starting to dive into my human design, it was talking about how actually it is better for me in a large part to keep people at a distance, because then they are sort of more able to feel inspired rather than have those projections. Which is it's interesting because I have spent so much of my life trying not to keep people at arm's length because I know that that's not how you have a close friendship or marriage. And so it's interesting because I now am in a place, and I'm so grateful to be in a place now where I have that foundation. I have the few cl very close friends, and I have my husband, and I don't, I, it's not that I'm not open to other close relationships. It's that I can allow those relationships to grow close over time, and that I don't need to jump right in and fall in love, so speaking. You can totally fall in love in a friendship. Friendships are so, deep and similar to romantic relationships in the way that they can begin and break up and all of these things. And so yes, I do, and I try my very best to live by this saying, and I don't remember who said it, but basically, you are going to be the hero of some people's story, and you're going to be the villain of other people's story, and none of it has anything to do with you.
Yes, double
So I feel like
tap,
that
mic
is a
drop.
saying that like Oh, embodies that idea.
Yeah, I feel like anyone with the five in their profile can really probably relate to that really powerfully. I feel like it can be so easy as a five to kind of be put on this pedestal and then you be up on the pedestal, like, how did I get up here? I didn't want to be here in the first place. And so I love how you're talking about like really honoring the close relationships that you have in your life. I think that's such a great practical tool for anyone that might feel like, I'm on this pedestal. How did I get up here? Can someone let me down? And giving them that practical tool of like, well, what are the relationships that you actually want to have close and sacred to you? I feel like that in itself is just such a useful tip for people.
Yeah, well, thank you. And don't get me wrong, I'm a performer by education, so I don't mind being on the stage and all of that and the eyes on me. In fact, I
Love that.
actually most often feel more comfortable on a stage in front of hundreds of people than I do in a conversation with two or three people. Funnily enough, but yes, it is. It took some time because when I first had my spiritual awakening and started delving into this world, I lost all of my close friends. I literally, it was me, my entire bridal party, except for my sister and cousin. They're stuck with me to a degree. Gone. There was like seven of them. And that was really, really hard. And it took a long time where it was just me and my husband was my only friend. And then I had this other friend that I met that I talk about in the beginning of the book who invited me to my first psychic fair. And she was my only close friend for like 7 years before I started to really shift and heal that wounding around that. And then now have welcomed in a few more close friends who I trust and love. And so it's not so easy and cut and dry, and you need the practical stuff because, expansion is amazing and beautiful, but without integration, it is nothing, right? We can know all the things and download all the things, but if we do not integrate it into our daily life, if you do not integrate it into who you are being out in the world, it's not actually grounding into the earth. It's not actually changing the reality of humanity.
Yes, that is so good. I all of your channels, which are our innate strengths in human design, are either focused on this incredibly powerful internal will or community outward focus.
You got me. That will. Sometimes I feel it, girl, and it's like a little scary. It's like this primal. It's like this very like if I want something, it's like I was having a conversation with my 6-year-old the other day, and we've been having some real power struggles around eating and food because, of course, who doesn't want to only eat hot dogs and pizza and ice cream, right? But like that's not serving our body, and so we have these power struggles. And there was a moment where he was just having a meltdown, and everything in me from my childhood, from my triggers, I wanted to yell at him, I wanted to scream at him, but instead, I just allowed the feeling, those feelings of wanting to do that, wash over me and sink actually into my body. And I started to have a complete meltdown myself and like a huge catharsis in right there in front of him. And he and I were just sort of meeting in this place of humanness and equality, even though, I'm his mother and I'm 35 and he's 6. He's a projector, by the way. And so but I looked at him and I said, I completely understand, like it's okay to have your feelings, and you have met your match. And when I want something or I decide that I'm going to teach you something, that's how it's going to be. And you can feel it as I say it, and I can feel it, this that will, that just like I'm gonna get it, like I can feel it, and it scares me sometimes.
Yes, and there's something so beautifully aligned about that will. Sometimes that will can very much come from ego, but the way you express it, and even that story, it's just like, this is me, and I'm meeting you. Yeah, it's so powerful. I know you work with a lot of moms as well. Do you have any just like shares or something on your heart you're called to speak about in that meeting of your child, knowing that they actually have so much wisdom as well?
I do know that they have so much wisdom as well. And I do recognize that though in this body, in his mind right now, he is a child, that he is a soul that has vast experience, just as I do. And that he, before he came into this life, knew exactly who he is and who he was wanting to be in this life. And so, as much as I want to guide him and teach him things like discipline and follow through, and I don't mean discipline like punishment, I mean discipline like showing up for the things that are good for you, even when you don't want to or you don't feel like it. Right? So teaching him things like discipline and follow through and self-love, and really ultimately understanding that I can only teach him those things by doing those things myself, because children always do as we do, not what we say. So if I can, and sometimes it gets to be a little too much where I'm like really hard on myself about it, so I try not to be too hard on myself about it. But yeah, the more I love myself, the more he will learn to love himself. The more I, instead of screaming at him, and I allow myself to have that breakdown, to have that catharsis, to have those big feelings, he will know that that's okay for him to do too. To have the feelings, to have the meltdown in a safe space so that then he can move out in the world in a way that's more aligned, right? But yeah, I see them as teachers just as much as I see myself as their teachers.
I feel like most all moms need to hear what you just said right there, and parents just in general, of our actions speak so much. And I love that you're just like, if I can put these things first with me, and I can imagine, I'm not a mom or a parent right now, but I can imagine how it feels like you have to put them first. But there is so much power in putting you first.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You love that. Okay, as we're coming to a close on our conversation, I have to throw in this one last piece about your human design because I feel like it brings us full circle. So your ideal environment in human design, do you know what it is? Have you?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I'm like, I can't let that slide after that is the story that you brought up at the beginning of this episode.
When I read, and I'll let you say what it is, but when I read that in my chart, I started to cry because I have never felt any like such a strong connection to like a piece of land that I did when I was there in Mount Shasta.
So her ideal environment is mountains, if you didn't pick up on that.
It surprised me because I love the beach. Like I'm such a beach baby. I love the ocean. And I've never really been like, oh yeah, the mountains. But when the first time I went to Mount Shasta, I was just like, I was blown away. Like I have never felt like I was having some type of romantic relationship with this just mound of dirt. Like it's magical. And I was like, I would talk to her and communicate with her, and it was so very profound.
Oh my gosh. I also have mountains as my ideal environment, and I really understand that, especially as someone who similarly loves the beach. And our ideal environment, just in case you're new to this element of human design, it's not necessarily somewhere we're meant to be all the time. It's just somewhere that gives us a lot of clarity and somewhere that opens up this new channel for us to thrive. And so everything you were just sharing about, I just arrived there and I was like, what is with this mound of dirt?
Yes.
And then had
Yes.
this incredibly profound experience there.
Yes. And I think too, the app that I was using was saying like it could even just be places that are elevated. So, like for example, I went to a breathwork class last Sunday that was in the upstairs of a cabin. And I felt like, yes, this is perfect. It also being on the stage, right? So walking up that little set of stairs and being, I feel very comfortable there at that elevated place. And that doesn't mean like I think I'm better than anybody else or anything like that. It just does feel natural. It feels really good to be upstairs or up on a stage or up on the mountain or near it or something like that.
And I love, connecting this back to you and the amazing work that you do in the world. Like, you've just naturally found all these places. Like, you don't need to know what your human design is. You don't need to know like what are the things I need to do. Like, it all comes back to like trusting where you're led to. Like, I'm guessing, tell me if I'm wrong, you found Mount Shasta before you actually read, right? You did say,
Yeah, no, well, I knew, so I had seen that Mount Shasta and Sedona, Arizona are like very energetically powerful spots in the US that Shasta is a chakra, Sedona is a vortex. So I wanted to go there for those reasons. But I didn't know anything about the human design or anything like that, and I didn't know what I was going to experience while I was there.
I love that so much. So on that note, are there any final words you want to give someone who's like, I'm craving like a trust, like you're talking about right now, a trust to like go in the direction that I'm just led towards. Do you have any final words like on that or just anything else that's coming through really?
Yeah, something that played in my head on repeat and still does to this day is the title of the last chapter in the book, and it's called Remember Who You Are. And that phrase just holds so much meaning to me, and maybe for those of you who are listening, it can as well. And so when I say remember who you are, I'm talking about, remember who you are when you were a child and you felt free and you knew exactly who you were and you knew what you wanted to be, whether that was, going to manifest in the exact way you thought or not. You knew who you were and who you wanted to be. So remember that, remember who you are in terms of your multidimensionality, that you are so powerful and spiritual and have the ability to tap into ancient wisdom and healing that is within either your lineage or your ancestry or just your awareness. Just remember that you can heal yourself, that you can empower yourself, that you are the only one who can heal yourself and empower yourself, that you do not need to project your power onto other people, that you are one with the whole and you are also sovereign. So just remember who you are.
I feel like we could clip that part of this and just play it again and again and
Let's
again.
get clipped.
Yeah, so good. Thank you so much for sharing so many amazing stories, taking us on journeys with you today, dropping so much wisdom. I'm so grateful to have spent this time with you. And I know everyone listening feels exactly the same. Of course, we'll have your beautiful book all linked up in the show notes for people, so that they can feel more of that will and that beautiful power that's just come through.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you're ready to get unstuck and on with a joyful life, you're ready to be magnetically you in life, relationships, business, and everything in between, I invite you to apply for coaching together. It all starts with a clarity call. If you thought this was magic, get ready to blow your mind through your own possibilities. Apply for coaching at megansiemens.com/coaching.